the assassin.
Hook 'em horns, motherfuckers!
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate.
Oh, you suck.
I have no regrets while your life is fading.
Hook 'em horns!
I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
Them boys
you
are back.
I break necks, call me Jack Tate.
Hook 'em.
I have no regrets while your life is fading.
Oh, you suck.
I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Oh, man, if you didn't know, if you didn't hear, hook 'em horns, motherfuckers. Hook 'em horns. Oh, you know I had to start today's show off with a recap on that just excellent fucking game from the Texas Longhorns. I did not expect that. I did not expect a Texas Longhorn ass-kicking of the Oklahoma Sooners. Their new slogan for the Sooners should now just be Loser Sooner instead of Boomer Sooner, because you motherfuckers got trounced 49-0. Oh my God, the Longhorns just dominated this game. It was so fucking awesome. We got Quinn Ewers back at quarterback. He went 289 yards and 4 touchdowns. He just torched this Oklahoma defense. Xavier Worthy, the wide receiver, he's been having a phenomenal year. He had a great game. The defense had a great game. The Oklahoma Sooners quarterback had a total of 38 yards of passing. 38 yards of passing. My bitch ass could throw for 38 yards in a fucking football game. So that motherfucker didn't do shit. Now, granted, they did not have their typical starting quarterback in, but guess what? Go fuck yourselves. You got your ass beat. Texas Longhorns domination. That is the biggest victory for the Texas Longhorns against Oklahoma in their entire history. So that was just a fun motherfucking game to watch. Oh, I did not expect that shit. I expected it to be a good game. I thought it was going to be a back and forth battle, but no. Texas Longhorns domination. Fucking love it. Doesn't matter what the Longhorns do the rest of the season, by the way. That was a great win, and it was fun to watch. Because most people think it's not fun to watch an ass kicking. If it's your team and it's against a team you fucking hate, yeah, it's actually hilarious to watch, because I watched that shit from start to finish. There wasn't 1 second of that game that I was going to stop watching, because it was so goddamn hilarious to see. So, hook 'em horns, motherfuckers. That was great. By the way, it's awesome, because I think for once, the Texas Longhorns are finally going to be set at quarterback for the next couple of years, because, you know, Quinn Ewers, he's having a good year so far this year. He probably will still be the starting quarterback next year, even though Arch Manning's going to be coming to town. But regardless, we got Ewers now and then Arch Manning next. So I think finally we're going to be set at the quarterback position, because that's been the biggest problem for the Longhorns over the years. Since Colt McCoy, basically. And it is so nice to not only see us kick the shit out of Oklahoma and give them their third loss in a row, by the way. But hey, man, we are looking great at quarterback. And yeah, what a great game. So hook 'em horns, motherfuckers. All right, so let's talk some more football. We had a great week of week 5 football. So let's start it off with the London game between the New York Giants and the Green Bay Packers, which was a huge surprise. You know, it started out as Packers domination. I mean, it looked like they were just going to run away with this game. But then all of a sudden, the fourth quarter, the Giants just turned it on and just scored 14 points and ended up getting the win 27-22. It's just really weird for the Packers, because they start out the games pretty good. You know, for the most part, they look really solid in the first half. But then the second half starts and they just lay an egg. I don't know what the problem is. I don't know if it's coaching or if it's just the rest of the team. But they are not looking good when it comes to the second half. Whereas the Giants, they're not that great of a team. Yes, they're 4-1, so I mean, congratulations to them. But I still don't really believe in them as a legit squad, just because they don't have a lot going on offensively. It's just the Packers let them stay in the game, and then the Packers just couldn't score anything in the second half, and the Giants ended up getting the win. And hey, you know, shout out to London, because usually they get shitty ass games over in London, and for once, y'all got 2 weeks in a row of two really good close matchups. Because like I said, man, the Packers were up, what, like 17-3 at one point in this game. So it looked like it was just going to be a runaway from the Packers. And it really did not turn out that way. You know, Saquon Barkley, he had another solid game. He had 13 carries for 70 yards and a touchdown. And Aaron Rodgers didn't have a shabby game. He went 25 for 39, 222 yards, two touchdowns. But it just was not a good second half. And I don't know what the Packers are going to do to put it together. But they got to get something going here pretty soon. Then another weird game was between the Los Angeles Chargers and the Cleveland Browns. At first, the Chargers, they ripped this shit open. It looked like it was going to be a solid, easy breezy game for the Chargers. But then the second half hit, and the Browns actually started to, the Browns started off the game hot. They were up 14-3. But then the Chargers started to get it going in the second quarter and the third quarter. But they just let the Browns hover around, and the Chargers did get the win 30-28. But there was this really stupid play on the final couple of drives where the Chargers had a 4th-and-2 or 4th-and-3, and they ended up going for it. Now, they were in their own territory, but they were kind of like at the 40-ish yard line. So they ended up throwing the ball, and they gave the Browns the ball back with great field position. Now, lucky for them, the Browns' offense is pretty stagnant, especially with Jacoby Brissett at quarterback. But really, the Chargers barely hung on to this one. And it's just it's weird because they are a good team. But I guess this is just typical Chargers where they just can't get it going because they are a good team. They are battling through some injuries right now. But they just keep making those really dumb analytical mistakes. And you wonder if it's going to cost them at some point during the season. Now, it did not cost them this game. They still got the win. But you can hear a lot of rumblings from their players, not only in the locker room, but Keenan Allen, their wide receiver yesterday, was he's injured right now. And so he was not at the game, but he was watching the game from home, and he was tweeting, like, what the fuck are we doing here? What's going on? And he also did not delete those tweets, and he did not get called out by anybody from the, like, within the locker room. So it kind of makes me feel like he's sending a message from his own teammates. So, the coach of the Chargers might want to stop with the whole analytics thing and actually start playing with the flow of the game for once, because that actually is a good part of the game, just like analytics is as well. Then moving on to the Chicago Bears versus the Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings pretty much dominated this game from start to finish. It ended up being a close score in the end, but it was 29-22 Vikings win. And it was just a very solid offensive game from the Vikings, as it should be, because they do have a great offense. Kirk Cousins went 32 for 41, 296 yards and a touchdown. Justin Jefferson had a great game with 12 receptions and 154 yards. And Dalvin Cook had a great game, too, 18 carries for 94 yards and two touchdowns. And the Bears, they just can't seem to get it going, and they're not looking like a really good team at all. And they just suffered yet another loss, and the Vikings just keep on rolling. Then we had the Detroit Lions at the New England Patriots, and this just goes to show why I never believe in the Detroit Lions, because I thought the Lions were actually going to get this win, because the Patriots, they don't even have a good team. They are playing with their third-string quarterback, Zappy, who actually had a pretty good game. And the Patriots absolutely demolished the Lions yesterday, 29-0. you know, the Lions came into this game with the number one scoring offense in the league, and they didn't score 1 point yesterday. And, you know, the Patriots' defense really dominated, and their offense was able to do just enough to get the points. And so, yeah, the Patriots got a huge win against the Lions, and that's why I don't ever believe in the Lions, because once you start to believe in the Lions, they let you know that there's no reason to ever believe in the Lions. Moving on to the Seattle Seahawks at the New Orleans Saints. This was another high-flying game. The Seahawks, they continue to have these crazy offensive put-out games. I mean, Geno Smith, he went off again. He went 16 for 25, 268 yards and three touchdowns. Tyler Lockett had a huge game, five receptions, 104 yards and two touchdowns. So they had a huge offensive game. But hey, man, so did the Saints. Taysom Hill, he had nine carries for 112 yards and three touchdowns. And he is not the running back, y'all. He's technically now the tight end. But, you know, he tends to play. He could play the quarterback position. He could play the running back position. He could play wide receiver. He could play tight end. So he's kind of that dude where you could just put him in. And he sometimes tends to have a weird game like this. And he did. And he was why they ended up getting this close win, 39-32. Then in the ass-kicking, boring-ass game of the day, which I expected it to be this way, but the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Buffalo Bills, the Bills dominated the Steelers 38-3. This is one of the worst games the Steelers have ever had. They couldn't get it going offensively. As I've stated, you know, they're a really solid defense, but since T.J. Watt has been out, they don't look good without T.J. Watt. So they really have nothing to brag about. They are an awful team. And they went up against one of the best teams in the league, and the Bills just opened it up on them. I mean, Josh Allen went 20 for 31, 424 yards and four touchdowns. He's on my fantasy football league, by the way, and he got me 51 freaking points yesterday. So that was cool, although I still got the loss. Don't cry for me, though, because I've been undefeated and kicking the shit out of everybody's ass in this league. But still, I was kind of pissed off at my quarterback because he scores 51 points and I still didn't get the freaking win, so what a waste of 51 points, but, you know, that's how fantasy football do. But it was just a crazy day for the Bills and a shitty day for the Steelers, but that was what I expected because the Steelers, offensively, they don't got a lot going on, and defensively, they can't really hold it down like they used to. Then the Miami Dolphins at the New York Jets, which started out as a close game, but then the Jets just ran away with it in the fourth quarter. They ended up rolling the Dolphins 40-17. They look pretty good with Zach Wilson back at quarterback. I don't know if they're going to be able to maintain that or if they're just going to kind of be that up and down team. But hey, so far, so good. Even though, you know, Miami didn't have that great of a game yesterday, Raheem Mostert, he had a great game with 18 carries and 113 yards with a touchdown before things started getting out of hand. But also the rookie Breece Hall for the Jets, he had a good game yesterday as well. And he made some key touchdowns yesterday for the Jets. So they seem to put together a really solid game against the Dolphins and for a huge win. Then we had the Atlanta Falcons at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Started out as a total ass-kicking by the Buccaneers, but then they just started to let the Falcons get into it in the fourth quarter for some reason. There was a controversial roughing the passer call. The defensive end had Tom Brady in his grip, and I mean, there was nothing he could have done other than what he did. And basically, he just threw Tom Brady around. It wasn't like anything egregious. It wasn't anything weird or anything, but they called it a 15-yard penalty. And at this point in the game, if I recall, because I was watching this game, it was a third down play and on the sack, so it would have ended the drive. And it was possible that the Falcons could have made a comeback and, you know, ultimately took the lead from the Bucs. But this actually just kept the drive going, and the Buccaneers were able to run the clock out and get the win, 21-15. But it was a horrible call. Other than that, though, Tom Brady, he had a Tom Brady-type day where he went 35 for 52, 351 yards and a touchdown. And then Leonard Fournette, He had a great day on the ground with 10, not just on the ground, but in the passing game as well. He had 10 receptions for 83 yards and a touchdown. It was a weird game for the Buccaneers just because that they did give up that lead towards the end, and their defense is not known for doing that, but they really did start to break down in the end. And their offense kind of got stagnant as well. So who knows if that's going to be something normal for the Buccaneers moving forward, or if that was just because they were playing a divisional opponent. Then we had the Tennessee Titans at the Washington Commanders. This was a pretty back and forth game, as a matter of fact. The Titans did get the win 21-17, but it was just back and forth the whole way through. Carson Wentz had a really good game. He went 25 for 38, 359 yards and two touchdowns. Derrick Henry had another solid game, 28 carries, 102 yards and two touchdowns. Carson Wentz's wide receiver of choice yesterday was Brown with two receptions, 105 yards and two touchdowns. The Titans just happened to get the best of the Commanders in this game. The Commanders are 1-4 on the season. So they are falling behind everybody else in the NFC East because the NFC East teams are actually doing really well right now. We've got the Eagles at 5-0, Cowboys at 4-1, the Giants at 4-1, and the Commanders at 1-4. So y'all are going to have to get your asses into gear if you want to catch up with the rest of us. Then another team that I feel like are very similar to Detroit, where you start to believe in them and then they let you down. And that would be in this matchup, the Houston Texans versus the Jacksonville Jaguars. I started to believe in the Jaguars, but then they did what they do. They lost to the Texans 13-6. I don't know how the hell that happened. Trevor Lawrence did not have a good day. He threw for two interceptions. Pierce, the running back for the Texans, he was just able to have a solid day. He had 26 carries for 99 yards and a touchdown. So he basically was the reason why the Texans actually won, because the scoring lineup here is in the first quarter, the Jaguars were up 3-0. Then in the second quarter, the Texans went up 6-3. And then nothing happened in the third quarter. And then in the fourth quarter, the Texans were able to score 7 points. So that's how we got to 13-6 yesterday in that Texans-Jaguars matchup, as you would expect it would go, would be 13-6. I'm shocked it didn't end in a tie, honestly. Then the afternoon games, we had the San Francisco 49ers at the Carolina Panthers. The Niners demolished the Panthers 37-15. Garoppolo had a solid day, 18 for 30, 253 yards, two touchdowns. Jeff Wilson had a solid day on the ground, 17 carries, 120 yards, and one touchdown. And the Carolina Panthers did so bad that they fired their coach Matt Rhule today, which I think is not surprising at all. In my opinion, he was a coach on the hot seat at the beginning of the season. He actually was my prediction to be the first coach fired this season, which he is. It was either between him and Ron Rivera. So Matt Rhule is the winner of the I'm Fired First This Year contest. Like I said, I think it's a good move for the Panthers just because you could tell that this team did not believe in whatever he was saying. As a matter of fact, it kind of looked like, in my opinion, Matt Rhule might have wanted to just get fired because yesterday's game was horrible. I actually just finished recording my segment with Simon on his show, and we were just kind of talking about this. And he had mentioned something in the press conference yesterday, in the after-game press conference, that basically the coach really didn't give a shit. And so I'm kind of thinking that maybe he just did not give a shit, and he kind of checked out already, and he was ready to go. He did have a very successful coaching career in college football, so I have a feeling he's going to either maybe take that Nebraska job, possibly Oklahoma, because I imagine they're going to be looking for a new coach at some point. So he's going to have tons of job offers in the college world, but obviously he failed as a coach here in the NFL. He didn't make the playoffs. He didn't come close. As a matter of fact, they only had, 11 wins while he was there. They never had a solid quarterback. They never had a solid anything, honestly. This is the first firing of the season. I'm sure we will have a couple more as the season goes on. We'll definitely have a few more once the season ends. It was a good showing from the 49ers, of course. They racked up a shit ton more injuries, but hey, they still keep on winning. And the Panthers, they are now turning a new page in the chapter of the Carolina Panthers. We'll see how the rest of their season goes. It sounds like they're going to start possibly trading off a bunch of their players right now, because they do have some really solid players. You know, they've got Christian McCaffrey at running back. They've got DJ Moore at wide receiver. So they have a few trade pieces that they probably are going to move, because they could use some draft picks over the years, because now obviously the Panthers are in full-on rebuilding mode. Oh, also Baker Mayfield, their quarterback, he got injured yesterday. It looks like he sprained his ankle and is probably going to be out a couple of games. So we'll see what happens with the Panthers the rest of this season. Then we had the Philadelphia Eagles at the Arizona Cardinals in a very interesting game. It was back and forth for the most part. The Eagles did get the win 20-17. But it was actually kind of amusing to me, because it's just the theme of the Arizona Cardinals. You know, the whole offseason was just a battle between Kyler Murray and the front office and the coaching staff. And are they going to give him a new contract? They ultimately ended up giving him the new contract. Then there was all the drama of them putting that clause in on how many hours he's supposed to watch film and blah, blah, blah. And just all this jawing back and forth between he and the coaching staff now on, like, plays and all that stuff. And they just can't get it together, and they still couldn't get it together yesterday. They actually had a chance to win this, or to tie this game up at the end and send it into overtime, but they just can't make it. You know, there was a second down play. I think it was like second and 10. Kyler Murray starts running for it, but he slides too early, so it's... he runs to spike the ball, and it's third and one. And when he spikes the ball, it becomes fourth and two. So they're in field goal range, but it was just a whole comedy of errors, and nobody knew what was going on. And you know, Murray took the slide way too early, so it just was weird. And the Cardinals just can't put it together. Whereas the Eagles, they just continue to put it together. Jalen Hurts had yet another solid game. He had 61 yards rushing and 2 touchdowns, so he's just carrying this team. He ended up finding Dallas Goedert, their tight end, for 95 yards yesterday. So they had a really solid game. They're the only undefeated team still in the league. They're 5-0, so they continue to roll, and the Cardinals continue to reel. And then my favorite game of yesterday, my Dallas Cowboys at the Los Angeles Rams. The Dallas Cowboys motherfucking dominated. I did not expect this shit yesterday. Defensively, we killed it. First drive of the game, DeMarcus Lawrence picks up a fumble, runs it back for a touchdown, and you know, we offensively, not that great. Cooper Rush only had 10 completions yesterday. So this whole notion that he's going to be taking over for Dak is just ridiculous. And that whole storyline needs to stop, because it's just not going to happen. He's obviously the backup. He's just doing what he needs to do, and that's managing the game. He's got a great ground attack that's helping. You know, Tony Pollard had a solid day yesterday, 8 carries for 86 yards and a touchdown. Zeke also had a solid day yesterday. And they're just maintaining offensively, but defensively they're killing it. It was funny because Micah Parsons, you know, it looked like he had some type of groin injury, and it looked like he might miss some reps in the second half, but he came right in and had 2 sacks that were pivotal in the game, and he just is such a game changer and such a huge player. He had 2 sacks on the game yesterday. You know, like I said, DeMarcus Lawrence had another great game. Defensively, the Cowboys are locking it down. It's funny too, because the Rams, they don't have that Rams magic anymore, especially on the offensive side of the ball. You know, we used to talk about that Sean McVay is just like this genius, and I'm not saying that he's not anymore. I'm not saying that they're washed up at all, but this offensive line is trash, and it's not giving Matthew Stafford enough time to do shit. While they had one explosive play yesterday with Cooper Kupp, who did have 7 receptions for 125 yards and 1 touchdown. He had that one really solid catch with the one hand where he just ran up the field for the touchdown. That was about their only play of the game. And other than that, the Cowboys dominated. And it was fucking great. And it was a great weekend of football for me, because Longhorns kicked ass, Cowboys kicked ass, and we keep winning without Dak. So hopefully we keep this winning formula going. We are going to Philly this week, so we'll see what happens. But it's going to be a division battle between the Cowboys and the Eagles this weekend. Then Sunday night football, we had the Cincinnati Bengals at the Baltimore Ravens. Very close game between the two of them. You would have expected it, at least I expected it, to be a quarterback battle between Burrow and Lamar Jackson. But really, no, neither one of them could get it going at all last night. While they both had solid games, made big plays for both of their teams, overall, it was a very stagnant game from both offenses. And both quarterbacks were very sloppy in certain positions at many points in the game. So it was very sloppy offensively, but defensively, both teams were able to get it going. It was just back and forth all the way through. And ultimately, the Ravens were able to get the win 19-17. It was actually nice to see Jim Harbaugh actually do what the opposite of what Staley's doing with the Chargers. And it's learning from your stupid analytics mistakes. And yes, analytics does play a huge role in the game. And yes, you should go for it on fourth down on occasions, but you also need to take into account that sometimes you just got to take the points. And it was nice because Harbaugh just took the points last night. It felt like, oh my God, the Bengals are going to come back. I mean, you're only up 16-10. And then the Bengals did make a comeback and they would go up 17-16. But lucky for them, they've got Lamar Jackson, who was able to take the ball down the field, get them into field goal range, and they've got the best kicker in the game in Justin Tucker. So you basically know he's automatic from within 50 yards, sometimes even further out than that. Because he does hold the record. I believe it's, what, 66 yards? So he is solid. And they won. And that's because he just took the points. You never know what's going to happen in those stupid analytical decisions, but he took the points. They got the win. And you need to take the points sometimes because in a division battle against the Bengals, this is a team that knows you, and anything can happen in these division matchups. And good for the Ravens to get that win and move on. And that's a huge division win for them. All right, and so let's get to tonight's Monday night matchup. We've got the Las Vegas Raiders at the Kansas City Chiefs. Right now, the Chiefs are a 7-point favorite. And, I mean, the Raiders, they really haven't been able to get it going. I mean, defensively, there was always going to be those questions about what they were going to be just because they have a very weak secondary. But offensively, they're not doing what we expected them to do. They're getting it started. They'll start off the game real hot, but then they'll cool off as the game goes on. Whereas the Chiefs are just the Chiefs. Mahomes, he's on fire. He's having yet another spectacular season. And even though, you know, he's missing Tyreek Hill, the defense isn't that great. They're holding it down, and they're getting the wins, and they own the Raiders. So until the Raiders are able to turn it around, I can't pick the Raiders, especially because the Kansas City Chiefs are at home. And so I've got the Chiefs winning big tonight, 30-21. All right, and so let's move on to some baseball. We had a great weekend of baseball. The wild card matchups all finished up this weekend, and this was the first season where we had a legit wild card round. Because the last couple of seasons, when they first introduced the wild card, it used to only be a one-game play-in, which was always stupid, because in baseball, you need a series. You need at least a three-game series. So finally this year, they changed it, and now we got a three-game series. All the home teams, they played all three games at home, so that worked out perfect. And they went the distance. We had some great games between all of them. And so now we've got our division matchup set. So let's get into, first of all, the ALDS. Let's start with the Cleveland Guardians at the New York Yankees. So the Guardians, they absolutely dominated their wild card matchup this weekend. They totally dominated the Rays. Their starting pitching was phenomenal, and they were able to score when they needed to. They actually had this epic 15-inning matchup, and Gonzalez, finally, he just hit this walk-off home run that you just knew was a home run right as he hit it off the bat, and they would move on. And so they're going to be playing the Yankees in a five-game series here. And I think overall these teams match up pretty well against each other. They both have solid starting pitching, but I do think the Guardians have the edge in this matchup in the bullpen. So if it becomes a bullpen battle, the Guardians are going to win. But if it becomes a battle between the bats, where if the Yankees offensively just get going, I don't think the Guardians are going to be able to keep up. Now, the Guardians can score a lot. They are very capable of scoring the runs. But unfortunately for them, the Yankees are capable of scoring more. And if the Yankees get going, they are very difficult to stop. So I've got the Yankees winning a close matchup. I've got the Yankees winning in four games over the Guardians. Then the second ALDS matchup is the Seattle Mariners versus the Houston Astros. So congratulations to Seattle. This is their first series win in the playoffs in many, many years. This is the first time they've made the playoffs since 2001. So this is big for them not only to be moving on to the ALDS, but to make the playoffs and then get this huge win, which they got a huge win against the Toronto Blue Jays. It looked like it was going to become, you know, they got game one and then game two, they were down 8-1 and would end up making a huge comeback and would get the win 10-9 against the Toronto Blue Jays. And that says a lot because the Blue Jays were one of the best high-scoring teams offensively this year. And it's kind of funny, too, because they were talking a lot of shit as the wild card round began, that the Blue Jays were, about how they think the division lineups should be changed now because the Yankees fell apart in the second half, and they shouldn't have been the division winners. Well, guess what? Blue Jays, y'all lost. So you can have fun sitting at home and watching the Yankees move on and watching the Mariners move on, apparently, too, in your own home. But regardless, yeah, the Mariners made this huge comeback. They would get the win, and now they've moved on to the ALDS to play the Houston Astros, who is their division opponent. So these two teams know each other very well. Now the Astros did own the Mariners this season. While the matchups were close, the Mariners did not win one of the series against the Astros at all this season. So I think the Astros are going to dominate. I think regardless, the Astros are head and shoulders above everybody in the AL. Their starting pitching is hands down the best. They have a solid bullpen. They play great on defense, and they could score runs like no other. So I've got this being a fun back and forth series just because they know each other well, but I've got the Houston Astros winning the series in five games. And then moving on to the NLDS, the Philadelphia Phillies surprisingly kicked the crap out of the St. Louis Cardinals. Their starting pitching just dominated the Cardinals and sent Pujols and Molina into early retirement because I think we all assumed the Cardinals were going to move on. But here are the Phillies to take on their division rivals, the Atlanta Braves. Now, I think, unfortunately for the Phillies, they are running into a brick wall because the Braves, to me, are the hottest team in baseball right now. They've been the hottest team right now for a minute. For the last couple of months, their starting pitching is solid. Their defense is solid. They've got a great bullpen, and they can score runs like no other, too. So I really don't think this is going to be a close one, and I actually think the Braves are going to sweep the Phillies in three and move on to the NLCS easily. Then we've got the San Diego Padres versus the Los Angeles Dodgers. It was crazy to see the Padres beat the Mets. Now, it was not surprising because that's what the Mets do, man. The Mets, they dominated this entire regular season, and that's why I never really bought into them. I thought, you know, overall, they match up great against all the teams in the postseason, especially in the National League, because, I mean, their starting pitching was phenomenal. They had a great bullpen. They could score a bunch. Their defense was great. They matched up well against the Braves, the Dodgers, and the Astros. But they just don't know how to win. And they let the Padres beat them in their own house. And, I mean, it was funny, too, because Game 2 and Game 3, but Game 2, it was really bad. The Padres were having issues with this new pitch-com system, which kind of has been a burden to bear for throughout this season. Like, it's a really good idea, but it obviously needs to be tweaked. And I don't understand why these teams that are having issues with it can't just go back to signs. There must be something that I'm missing that I don't understand, but it just kind of feels like to me, why is it so difficult for you to go back to the signs rather than the PitchCom system? Because the Padres were having major issues with it in game two against the Mets. And I think it's kind of what cost them, because like the pitcher, he couldn't hear anything. You could tell that the catcher was trying to figure out what was going on. They had to keep walking back and forth to the mound. So it was very annoying. But hey, the Padres still ended up getting the win, and they still dominated the Mets in their own stadium to move on to the NLDS and play their division rivals, the Los Angeles Dodgers. But I think the Dodgers, they're primed and ready to go. They're they've been the best team throughout the regular season. Now they have been known to stumble in the postseason. So it wouldn't shock me if the Padres are somehow able to put it together. But I really don't think they will. I think the Dodgers are going to dominate the Padres, and the Padres will fall back down to earth. And I think the Dodgers will get the win in the NLDS and move on to the ALCS in four games. And with that being said, I did say now that the Cardinals are out of the playoffs. So that sends Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina into retirement. And, you know, both of these guys are two, in my opinion, for sure, they are first ballot Hall of Famers. I mean, obviously, Albert Pujols, for all of the obvious reasons, I mean, he has been one of the most dominating hitters of this era. He did fall off when he went to the Angels. But, I mean, for the most part, he has been a dominating hitter. I mean, he eclipsed the 700 mark for home runs. So, obviously, he's one of the greatest players of all time. And then Yadier Molina, he's been one of the most solid catchers ever. I not just now in this era, but ever. He is hands down one of the greatest of all time. So I think both of these guys should be first ballot Hall of Famers. But you know how the baseball writers of America do. They've got their little pinkies out while they drink their fucking sip on their fucking tea, and they got all their little parameters. So I would not be shocked if they make Molina wait, but Pujols should be first ballot. But normally in this circumstance, I would do top five lists for both of these guys. But unfortunately, I really didn't have enough time to do research on that subject. Not only because we have a whole bunch of sports going on, but I really did not expect the Cardinals to lose that quick. So I will do a little bit of a rundown of their career stats, just because both of these guys are GOATs. So Albert Pujols, you know, he played with the Cardinals from 2001 to 2011, then would go on to the Los Angeles Angels from 2012 to 2021. Then he would play for the Dodgers for the 2021 season, and then he ended his career this year with the St. Louis Cardinals. He's an 11-time All-Star. He won two World Series with the Cardinals, one in 2006 and 2011. He's a three-time MVP in 2005, 2008, and 2009. He was the Rookie of the Year in 2001. He's a two-time Gold Glove winner, so it's not just behind the plate with his bat that he's great, but he also has been spectacular at first base. He's a six-time Silver Slugger Award winner, and his career stats to finish his career, batting average of .296, 3,384 hits, 703 home runs, which only four players have ever done that in the history of the league, and he ends up with 2,218 RBI. Then Yadier Molina, one of the greatest catchers of all time. He played his entire career with the St. Louis Cardinals from 2004 to 2022. He is a 10-time All-Star, 2-time World Series champ in 2006 and 2011, 9-time Gold Glove Award winner, 1-time Silver Slug Award winner. His career hitting stats are a batting average of .277, 2,168 hits, 176 home runs, 1,022 RBI. And as far as defense goes, which is where he owned, was he second all time. He's got 130 defensive runs saved. So like I said, that's second of all time. First all time, he has 845 assists. He's got a 40.21% runs caught stealing and 55 pickoffs. So he's just been the battery, as they call it, at the catcher position for the Cardinals. He's been solid. He never takes a day off unless injured. And even when he's injured, it's just crazy that both of these guys had such great careers. It sucks that they didn't end better, but hey, man, they both, it was really cool to actually see, because, you know, the crowd, they were in St. Louis, so the crowd gave them a good send off. And even though they lost, it was still, you could still, it was a, see, it was a very good moment for everybody in the St. Louis Cardinals organization, just because they were giving a great send off to two of their amazing players who both deserve to be in the Hall of Fame first ballot right off the bat. All right, now let's move on to basketball. I did my Western Conference season predictions on Friday's show, so we will do the Eastern Conference season predictions today, beginning with the Atlantic Division. So I've got the 76ers winning this division just because, you know, you've got Joel Embiid coming off of what should have been an MVP winning season. I just expect him to take what he did last season and just get better this year. And I really kind of feel like the 76ers are probably going to be the most dominant team in the Eastern Conference, depending on injuries, of course. But I mean, that's the case with every team. So I've got the 76ers just dominating. I really think James Harden, he seems to be taking on a team-oriented mindset, which is very weird for him. So he seems to be all in. You know they've got Maxey, the point guard who seemed to start getting going last year. So I kind of see him elevating his game this year. And I've got the 76ers being the most dominant team in the Eastern Conference this year. Then in the Atlantic Division, I have the Brooklyn Nets finishing second place. They're just a weird team. I mean, really, the Eastern Conference is so much more weak than the Western Conference. So you're going to see a lot of teams who aren't really that good make the playoffs anyways, just because they have enough. You know, the Nets are basically two players who maybe want to play basketball and Kevin Durant. You know, Kevin Durant, he's a solid basketball player, and I never question whether or not he wants to win, but he's got two teammates in Ben Simmons, who apparently finally has now overcome his period and is finally going to play some games this year. And then you've got Kyrie Irving, who the hell knows whatever is going to go on with this dude. Is he going to play? Is he not going to play? So we'll see what happens this year if they're able to put it together. They definitely have the talent to put it together, but it's really just going to be if the two drama queens, Ben Simmons and Kyrie Irving, are able to actually want to play basketball and actually take some Midol and get over it and just shut up and play basketball for once. You know, you've got a really good player in Kevin Durant. You might want to actually win some games because you're in the Eastern Conference and you could actually be a really good team if you actually played some fucking basketball. Then at number three, I've got the Boston Celtics. And while they're not really missing any players from last year's roster, just all the drama with Ime Udoka this offseason, I feel like is going to affect them on the basketball court, as it already has, which is one of the reasons why Udoka ended up ultimately getting suspended. Because I know a lot of people are trying to make it seem like it's not a big deal that Ime Udoka slept with an employee. And while it's not the worst thing ever happened to the world, he's still the coach and he still should not be sleeping around with employees. And that is exactly how his team felt. That is how the players have felt. That is what their opinions they have voiced. And it's because it's a distraction for the team. And instead of, you know, getting your rocks off, maybe you should have been fucking coaching your team. But anyways, that I feel like that drama is going to cost them a lot of their season this year. Now, luckily for them, they are in the Eastern Conference, and I think they could still make the playoffs because they do have a really good team. But the off-season drama usually affects you going into the season, and it usually doesn't turn out well for you. So I don't think the Celtics are going to rebound this year. Where I felt like before the Udoka drama, I felt like they were probably going to be a good repeat candidate to go into the finals for the Eastern Conference again. But I don't think that's the case this year. Then I feel like the in the Atlantic Division, the New York Knicks will finish in fourth just because, you know, they're the Knicks. Until they put something together, a solid team, and they actually start getting some wins regularly, you can't really believe in them. They still have Julius Randle, you know, who's been a great player for them since he signed on with them. But other than that, the Knicks don't really have much to discuss. And then rounding out the Atlantic Division, I have the Toronto Raptors just because I don't really think they're that great of a team. Maybe they'll be able to put something together. Maybe they won't, but I just don't really think they have much to write home about. So I've got them finishing fifth in their division. Then moving on to the Central Division, I have the Milwaukee Bucks finishing in first place just because, Giannis Antetokounmpo, until he starts to fall off, you can never count out the Bucks. They still have their entire core, which has won a championship 2 years ago, so they are still a very good team. I expect the Bucks to be one of the top teams out east, and I would not be shocked to see them back in the finals yet again. Then my surprise team in the Eastern Conference this year is going to be the Cleveland Cavaliers. They were on fire at the end of the season last year, and they really started to get it going. And then they made a huge trade this offseason for Donovan Mitchell, which I think finally puts them in a competitive balance with everybody else in the Eastern Conference. I think they're going to score a lot of points. It's just defensively is where I have a lot of questions for them, which is why I can't put them up there with the 76ers and the Bucks just yet. But I think they could probably potentially compete with the Heat because I don't think the Heat play that well defensively either. So we'll see what happens here with the Cavaliers. But I think the Cavaliers are going to be a very strong team this year who could shake things up out in the Eastern Conference. Then in the Central Division, I have the Chicago Bulls finishing in third place. They are a solid team. You know, DeMar DeRozan, he had a solid year last year, so I expect him to just pick up right where he left off last year and get going. But unfortunately for them, they're already starting the season off with the Lonzo Ball injury. Who knows when he's going to come back? And what sucks is he really was why they had such a pretty good year last year, and then they started to fall off once he got injured. So we'll see if they're able to overcome the Lonzo Ball injury. I don't know. There really isn't a lot to write home about with the Bulls. And until they can actually show that they're going to be a legit team, I can't really believe in them. Then at number four in the Central Division, I've got the Indiana Pacers, just because they don't really have much going on besides Buddy Hield. They're a very mediocre team overall. And then rounding out the Central Division, I've got the Detroit Pistons, who I think are probably going to be the worst team in the league this year, as they were last year. They're still putting it together. They've got a lot of question marks, and they really have a roster where you look at it and you're like, who the fuck is this on their roster? So I think the Pistons are probably going to be the worst team this season. Now moving on to the Southeast Division, I think the Heat are going to finish that division on top, just because they didn't lose a step. You know, they still have Jimmy Butler, who has been phenomenal since he signed with the Heat. And then you got Bam Adebayo, who I think is just he's really just been making strides these last couple of seasons, and he really made a big difference for them last year. And I just really see the Heat continuing to dominate. Then in the Southeast Division, I've got the Atlanta Hawks finishing in second place. They did make a huge trade this year for DeJounte Murray. And so I think him and Trae Young, they're going to be dropping bombs this year. I think the Hawks are going to score a lot of points, but the big question is going to be on the defensive side of the ball. So that's why I don't believe the Hawks are going to be able to get over the Heat. But I think the Hawks are going to be a legit competitive team this year. Then I've got the Hornets finishing third in the Southeast Division. Just because they, beyond LaMelo Ball, they don't have a lot going on. He seems to be getting better every year. He's a spectacular talent, obviously, but they need to get him some more help. And I don't think they've done that just yet. Who knows? Maybe they'll make some type of trade mid-season. I don't really know what they're looking to do with this team, but overall, the Hornets don't really have much going on besides LaMelo Ball. Then I have the Washington Wizards finishing fourth in the Southeast Division. Bradley Beal and Kyle Kuzma should score a lot of points, but other than that, they're still the Wizards. And until the Wizards do something magical like they should, because they're the Wizards, you can't pick them to be anything, because the Wizards suck. And then rounding out the Southeast Division, I've got the Orlando Magic. They're not a good team. Really, the only good player on their roster at this point that I could see was their rookie Paolo Banchero, who should have a good season because, you know, he's going to be really the focal point for this entire team. But other than that, I don't really expect to hear much noise coming from Orlando this year, as we don't usually hear much noise coming from Orlando other than in Disney World and all the theme parks out in Orlando, because the Magic suck. So those are my predictions for the Eastern Conference. And then on Wednesday's show, I will give my predictions on the playoffs and see who I think is going to go to the NBA Finals and be the NBA champion of the 2022-2023 season. So enjoy Monday Night Football, and I will talk to you fools on Monday. Or it is Monday, sorry. I will talk to you guys on Wednesday.